leaders have always had to make decisions and use their judgment. A long time ago, it used to be taking a look at all the data that existed and making an informed decision based on the data. Now leaders are going to have to make decisions based on uncertain data and incomplete data. And so it's really about how do you exercise these skills in today's environment, and it's going to look differently. Same thing with communication. Leaders have always had to be good communicators. And in this age where we've got all these digital technologies, that also means being able to command all these digital tools in front of you.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
Welcome back to the Digital to Learn podcast. I'm here with my co-host, Tiffany Snyder.
Hi, everyone. Tiffany. Thank you.
And our guests, Ann Phillips and Jerry Kane, welcome back.
It's good to be here.
Thank you.
If you missed part one of this two-part conversation, you can access the first episode on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or the Digital to Learn website.
I'm going to make an assumption here just based on the fallacy that you described earlier. So with book number two, are you still planning on emphasizing people even more than technology? So those that will be successful are those that innovate during this crisis and care for and develop their people, not just innovate using a specific technology or a new technology. Again, that's an assumption. I'm just curious.
Yes and no. We are certainly retaining the people focus of the technology fallacy, and we're not abandoning that. At the same time, there are certain technological features and capabilities that we're seeing that are absolutely indispensable. A cloud is one of them. You know, part of the, I mean, Zoom turns out to be the savior of COVID. Imagine if this disruption happened 10 years ago. You know, we would truly be, you know, stuck, you know, sending files via email, you know, having to do just conference calls, you know, just, it would be a disaster. And it's really remarkable at how well the infrastructure has held up. You see these companies ramping up in scale because we interviewed restaurants, and there's a platform called Olo, which helps them run delivery. And they just were able to get people up on board and give them a fully functioning computer infrastructure within a matter of weeks. And that would have been impossible 10 to 15 years ago. Mm. And so, and then data and then security. And so I think we can't ignore the technological questions that, and the technological sort of infrastructure, but we're trying to focus on which have been the sort of the real game changers and not do it. And within the caveat of, hey, it's still the capabilities, it's still the people, but you need to understand these things as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very good. In your book, you described eight fundamentals of leadership in the digital age. What are the things that contribute to individuals emerging as digital leaders in their organizations?
So it's interesting. The eight that we listed in the book, just to clarify, are not necessarily the only eight, right? So we took basically eight leadership traits that we think are pretty universal, and they existed before you add the word digital in front of leadership. Mm-hmm. But one of the points that we were trying to make is that leadership in many ways is the same, but in a digital environment, it might look a little bit differently. So for example, you know, leaders have always had to have a great vision, right? In order to describe to their followers where they want to go and how they want to get there. And it's even more important to have that vision. In fact, when we take a look at some of the big leadership traits that people are looking for, especially in this age, it is around vision, it's around being future-oriented, and it's around being change-oriented. That is all pointing toward the future and the change, and how do you take our company and our organization forward. So if we look at these eight traits that you're talking about, let's look at taking direction. I mean, that's a common leadership trait. But in this day and age, when you're giving direction, you're not sitting there and being very specific and prescriptive about what you want done, right? Instead, you're providing a vision and you're providing a purpose, and you're giving people the guidelines to go do what it is that they need to do. And same thing with business judgment. Leaders have always had to make decisions and use their judgment. a long time ago, it used to be taking a look at all the data that existed and making an informed decision based on the data. Now leaders are going to have to make decisions based on uncertain data and incomplete data. And so it's really about how do you exercise these skills in today's environment, and it's going to look differently. Same thing with communication. Leaders have always had to be good communicators. And in this age where we've got all these digital technologies, that also means being able to command all these digital tools in front of you, including social media, including understanding that your people are on different communication platforms. Mm-hmm. And without that knowledge, you can't be an effective leader.
Mm-hmm. So if I'm to be a digital leader, then do I actually need to have all of the digital skills? Or do I need to recognize people around me who do and leverage their skills?
So some combination, right? So really, I mentioned before three traits around having a vision, being change-oriented, being future-oriented. Well, the fourth trait that came up in terms of what's required of leaders is the concept of understanding technology, right? They're understanding their digital fluency, their, you know, being digitally savvy, however you want to describe it. But it's a certain degree of digital literacy. So leaders have to understand it. And when we talk about digital leaders, let's be clear, we're not talking about necessarily CIOs or chief technology officers. We're talking about leaders in a digital age. And all leaders in a digital age have to have a certain level of understanding of these technologies. It doesn't mean they need to know how to code. It doesn't mean that they need to learn Python, as Jerry's son is learning. But it does mean that they need to understand what these tools can do and all of the promise and capabilities that it can bring their organizations. And then to your point, Brad, they have to know who to tap into within their organizations and empower them to have vision and to be able to help shape the future of the organization.
Something I often say is it's a lot easier for me to teach the executive leaders the technology knowledge that they need to function than it is to teach the technical leaders the business knowledge they need to lead. And so we're not talking about rocket science, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to write this book. It is accessible, and Ann mentioned mindset. One of the biggest differentiators, you know, you hear people all the time saying, oh, I'm just not a digital person. I'm not a technology person. You know, when Carol Dweck is talking about mindset, that's a fixed mindset. It's this, I'm not this type of person. And one of the soapboxes, another one of the soapboxes I get on is that, you know, anybody can learn these capabilities. You know, it doesn't mean you're going to be an AI developer, but you can have a working knowledge of what these technologies can, and more importantly, can't do. So when people are trying to sell you something, you know to sort of how to be skeptical. And so it's, I agree 100% with Tom that it's this digital literacy that's most important. And it is accessible to anyone. And I would also say, if people have not updated their technology in the last 5 years, then their knowledge is obsolete and they need to do a little bit of reading. Mm-hmm. And we have a book coming out that's going to talk about some of that. So,
what a coincidence. Wow, isn't that a mark that's remarkable?
I love it.
Exactly.
And it probably also follows then that these are the folks who create the organizational mindset, that we're going to use technology, we're going to leverage it, it's going to make us better, get on board.
Yes.
That's right. And that's tied so closely to the culture that Jerry had mentioned earlier in the organization. And culture cannot be set or adopted unless it's set from the top, you know? Mm. So if leaders aren't doing certain things, then the rest of the organization just doesn't follow.
Again, in the higher ed context, there've been a lot of colleges and universities who for years have resisted doing online education. Mm-hmm. And then when they found out that there was money to be made, they decided to get on board, but it was almost too late. And now they find themselves in that same hole once again with COVID-19, I think.
Another thing that listeners can expect if they pick up a copy of your book is a conversation about pivoting in relation to a career path. So how is it that we can help students in this disruptive age and our students within the higher education spectrum as they prepare for their careers, and we hope for them to have the inclination and ability to pivot throughout the rest of their life.
I do a couple of very specific pedagogical things in the classroom to accomplish these goals. First is I do make heavy use of digital tools, blogs, Twitter, video conferencing now. And because digital technology is changing so rapidly and so frequently, I do turn the class into a bit of a sensing mechanism where we're all going out and learning and reporting on the aspects of technology that interest us and bring it back into the classroom. And I am very intentional with my students to say, I am doing this because anything I teach you now is likely going to be obsolete 2 to 3 years after you graduate. So what I can teach you how to do is teach you how to teach yourself. I try to equip them to be critical thinkers when it comes to technology, to be able to go out and teach themselves about things like this, to be able to go and pursue their passions and approach those with and discuss the business interests of those things. And so one, like letting them loose to do a bit of exploration on their own. Second thing I do, I often hear from executives that one of the challenges of college students today is they need too much direction, that they need to be told by their boss what to do, and then they can do it. And I think that's I think we cause this by giving them very clear syllabi, very clear expectations, and if they do everything we ask, they're going to get an A. I have actually flipped it up. So, and this was inspired by a partner at Goldman Sachs that we visited on our trip. And somebody asked her about higher education. And she said, you know, said this very thing, you know, it's too structured. She said, if I were teaching a class, I would say on the first day, oh, by the way, you're really in the classroom 2 doors down from here and you have a test tomorrow. Figure it out. And so what I've done is I give the speech on my first day of class, which scares about 25% of the students out, but nevertheless, that if you do everything I ask of you, you'll get a B+ in this class. If you do everything on the syllabus to get an A, you need to figure out how to add value above and beyond what I have outlined in the syllabus. And it is the single best pedagogical decision that I have ever made because it makes these students start thinking about what can I do creatively? Mm-hmm. How can I do things differently? What can I bring that no one else can bring? Because otherwise, they come in and saying, is this exactly what you want? Is this meet the rubric? Is this meet the... And that sort of narrows that thinking and that box checking. Last but not least, as I also counsel students, there's a little bit of a boomerang effect that I hear from them about 5 years out. You know, Professor Kane, I'm at a career juncture. What do I do? And this is, you know, I really like the Jesuit education at BC and the formative education. The one thing that I dislike is this sort of emphasis that you need to find your vocation or your singular calling. Full disclosure, I was actually a Methodist minister for 10 years before I became a business school professor. And many of those skill sets really have turned me into the professor I am today, so I don't regret it. But career paths these days are all over the place. And so what I encourage students to do is to cultivate 3 possible career paths and wait for the moment where the opportunity presents itself that you can't say no. And then you pick one of them and develop 3 more. For going forward, because it is all about, as the technology changes, the opportunities change. Last thing, my son will kill me for referencing him twice, but I brainwashed him. people ask what he wants to be when he grows up. His answer is, I don't know, the job I will have hasn't been created yet. And I think it's that mindset that we need to get into, even the college students today, because the world that they're coming into today, 10 years from now, is going to be radically different than it is today, and they need to be prepared to continually learn and adapt to this changing world.
Yeah,
for sure. And so, a lot of the things that Jerry described and things that he's doing with his students are things that will absolutely serve them well when they go out there and work. I mean, they're things that organizations are looking for, people who can take initiative, have a little bit of an entrepreneurial mindset, as well as a big focus on their own learning.
So if you think about today's college students, and I'm not sure what the elements would be, how digitally adventurous they are, how much they're willing to experiment to learn new things, all of those ingredients, and compare them with current employees, executives in today's organizations, is the distribution roughly the same? or is it different? So I don't know if that question even makes sense.
No, well, I'll turn it into a good answer at least. how's that?
That's even better.
Yes, exactly. One of the real problems we had with organizations, so the biggest barrier that people reported was risk-taking, as traditional organizations are built to eliminate or reduce risk. I mean, think of Six Sigma. That's about getting failure rate down to 0.0000 whatever percent. It's hard to be entrepreneurial in that type of environment. Mm-hmm. And if one thing we've seen in our interviews about COVID is people have had to be more experimental because nobody knows the answer, but not doing anything is also not an option. So it's really forcing them into being more risk-taking. And I think if there's a silver lining to this whole thing, is it's going to break that sort of inertia of don't move, don't take risks, don't change. And it's going to force executives to be more experimental and try things when they don't necessarily know the answer to how it's going to come out. And there's a real risk of failure, but we're going to try anyway. And if it fails, we're going to try it again and figure something else out. And that, I think, is a mindset that if we can get that and keep some of that after all this thing is over, whenever that is, then that will be one of the sort of positives to come out of all this mess.
And it's almost like the cost of failure now is less than it was a year ago. Yeah. I'm going to try this. It may fail. Oh, it did fail. Okay, I'll try something else. And that's
is the only way to ensure failure. You got to do something. And
exactly
people
right.
are realizing that. And many of the digital transformation executives that we've talked to are giddy about COVID. They're like, we can get away with more in the last 6 months. We've driven years worth of change in 6 months. Nobody's complaining about having to do video conferencing. Everybody has to. It really has created an opportunity. And just to like reiterate the technology fallacy, we said that the whole problem was people, not technology. You've seen massive companies completely transform in certain ways overnight. I mean, they went and started working completely remotely in the matter of 2 to 3 days. Mm-hmm. You can't tell me that's a technological problem. Zoom has held up. The internet has held up. You know, it's all worked and the people have held up now too. And so it was always that sort of risk aversion.
I would guess a surprising number of people who are saying today, I never thought I'd like working at home, but I really love it.
Absolutely. Now, the other trick, oh, I'm sorry to dominate, they've poked me in an area that you know I care about. The other danger is reflect on then what's being lost in that environment. And many of our executives are saying, well, how do we drive culture in a remote environment? We do lose some serendipitous connections and the ability to sort of create unexpected ideas. And so I actually don't advocate that companies work from home exclusively going forward. The trick is to figure out what is best done in person, what is best done online, and then organize your work accordingly.
Absolutely.
And then it's also going to mean rethinking the office. So do you need individual offices or do you need more collaborative space? Because that's what I can't, as I've used technology and learning, one thing it does an awful job with, even on Zoom, is constructive debate and interactive discussions. It just, you can't replace the face-to-face with that. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering how masks are going to affect that in person. And so there are certain things that absolutely should be done in person, and there are certain things that are absolutely fine to do online. And understanding which is what higher ed folks should be thinking about right now. It's about what executives should be thinking about right now. This is an experiment. Use it to learn.
And in some ways, if you think about our students, the learning process of how to engage in an online conversation with a group of people is something that's going to serve them well into the future that they might not have otherwise learned.
Well, that's what a lot of people in the workplace are learning right now too.
True.
Yes.
We just want to thank you for joining us today. This has been a great conversation. Thank you for your insights, your enthusiasm, and we will definitely be inviting you back when that second book comes out. So please let us know when that's about to happen, and we'd love to have you back on Digital to Learn.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having us. It's been an enjoyable conversation.
And a pleasure. Thanks.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are three things we ask you to do. One, come back and join us again. Two, tell your friends about us. And three, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
It's a digital world.
Always keep learning.